This is the audio that accompanies Narvstead versus Lakeside Village Condominium Association. We're off to California. We're in the condominium scenario again, kind of like we were in Hidden Harbor. We're also in the scenario which we've been talking about some for quite some time now, and more about enforceability, and not about whether we've got a valid a covenant. Although, arguably here, the argument by Narvstead is that this thing isn't valid out of the gate, kind of one way or another. And so we'll talk about this as we get deeper in. And we can even go back to Hidden Harbor, and they're saying that it was a question about validity, right? Whether it was a reasonable a new house rule that was adopted under the condominium associations. Here, it turns out this is one that's in place at the beginning, is in the original CCRs, and whether this thing is enforceable or not. First slide, here's our Lakeside Village. I guess it's a lakeside because we've got this lake that's in the property, and it's a condominium. These are individual units that are there. And in 1988, Natori Narvstead purchases a condominium and moves in there with her three cats. Now, it turns out in the original CCRs, and so even though we're in a condominium, they're calling these things covenants, conditions, and restrictions, so like they would call them in a homeowner association. If you go to slide two, we've got 530 condo units. They're subject to CCRs, and here this is not a house rule. This is actually in the original CCRs that were recorded, and they are enforced by the Lakeside Village Condominium Association. No animals, which shall mean dogs and cats. Livestock, reptiles, or poultry shall be kept in any unit, although it does permit domestic fish, as a, I guess opposed to foreign fish, and birds. Ms. Narvstead, slide three, shows up, and here's Boo Boo, one of her kitties, and she's got two more, tries to keep them away from other people knowing about the fact that she's got these. Eventually, she's found out about them, and the association demands their removal, and basically the way they're going to force her to remove is they're going to continue to assess a monthly fine on her for these cats. And her pushback here is that this restriction, although clearly either she knew about it or we'd say she had constructive notice via records notice, does not meet the requirements in California. And we're going to find out here in a second that California has a statutory requirement for enforceability of these types of restrictions, because cats, pets in general, are key to keeping yourself healthy and happy. And so this thing is arbitrary or against public policy. And so if we go to slide four, we'll find out that California, in some ways, is adopting something that looks a lot like the third restatement on touch and concern, and says, look, enforcement of equitable servitudes. Now, this language, equitable servitudes, is typically an equivalent to covenants, particularly restrictive covenants. I know it says equitable servitudes, and servitudes is that broad category, but typically this is used to talk about a covenant. If you go back to Tolk versus Moxaw, they use this language. Enforcement of equitable servitudes unless unreasonable. That is, we will enforce them unless they're unreasonable. So here we're not going to invalidate them. We're just not going to enforce them. So we're kind of like Shelley versus Kramer. We're not, and kind of like LD, we're not like this idea of saying whether we think it's valid or not. And to get this a little bit more broader, to understand, well, what do we mean by unreasonable is, if it's wholly arbitrary, it violates a fundamental public policy or imposes a burden that far outweighs any benefits. What's interesting is that last one kind of hits to the core of what we think about with servitudes, right? That servitudes are enforceable if it turns out that the benefit outweighs the burden. And the key here is the courts interpreting this is that we're not looking at the covenant or the CCR in the individual case where we're just talking about, let's say, Narvstead in this particular case. We're thinking about it as whole for the community, Right, and the case, particularly the majority, talks about like there are reasons why you would potentially have these pet restrictions, allergies, particularly because people are closer in kind of confined spaces. They have to go outside and do their business, and people step in it, whatever, and that might be another concern that's there. And so the court says, well, that's the lens we have to look at this through, and that there's a presumption that the CCRs are valid. Particularly these ones that are in the original documents, these original CCRs. And the reason there's this presumption that there's valid is because when people are buying these properties, the assumption is they're looking at the CCRs that are there, and there needs to be some stability and predictability because I might be buying into this community because there is this restriction. Right? And if courts are constantly coming in and not enforcing restrictions that are there, it's preventing the ability for private ordering, individuals using things like these CCRs and condominium associations or homeowners associations, to order their business in the way that they see fit. And if courts are constantly coming in and kind of yanking the rug out from underneath them, that really affects the stability and predictability. And if anything, the view here, right, is that Narstead kind of knew or should have known that when she was buying this property, that didn't allow dogs or cats, but certainly domestic fish and birds. Birds are loud too. And so that's the push. The dissent, obviously, a cat lover, says, look, this is really at the heart of what should be allowed. And we can only imagine, particularly if we think of kind of change of circumstance, let's say like right now, right, where you're kind of stuck in your condo, if you were not allowed to have a pet, maybe the pet restriction makes some sense, but things change. Right, and in those circumstances, we maybe wouldn't enforce them. And we've taken a look at this, like in the LD type of scenario. But the court's interpretation of the California Civil Code here is that we're really putting the presumption that this thing is valid, and it's a high burden on Narstead to prove that for everyone, that this is kind of crucial. And just because she's quiet with her cat or dog doesn't mean that others wouldn't be, right? And so there is the reason why the majority ends up not finding this to be non-enforceable. What's interesting is that after this case, California ends up adopting a statewide code that says, look, everybody in a common interest community. So this wouldn't be for the landlord-tenant scenario, but if I buy a property, I should at least be able to have one pet in my property that's there. The final slide is this idea of okay, what about standard of review for enforcement, right? And this is getting at this idea of, okay, look, are we looking at this as an enforceability part of it? Right, which is arguably what we're taking a look at here, right, versus a validity part of it. But it does mean that we still have this kind of reasonableness that would be interjected here, right? That is, as we enforce these types of things, they have to be enforced in reasonable means, right, in reasonable ways, and that we would want to kind of encourage compliance, deter violations, but do that in a reasonable manner, right? And so if you kind of go on through 517 through 518, it starts to kind of get into this discussion, and we'll talk about it even fuller when we take a look at 40 West 67th Street versus Pullman. Finally, is to think about what the California legislator and the court here is doing in the context of not about enforceability, because if we go back up to slide four, this is about whether they'll enforce it. And think about touch and concern, and we think about touch and concern as more as to whether we've actually got a valid covenant or not. And the third restatement would do a lot of what the court's doing here on the enforcement end, but actually do it on whether we've got a valid servitude or not. If we go back to the first restatement, right, this is a restrictive covenant, would meet the English rule. It probably deals enough with the land there. Burdens, particularly Narstead's property, increases the value, at least of some of the surrounding ones. It would probably meet that. But the third restatement, we would get at this idea of really, do we think the benefit's greater than the burden? And that seems to be the major debate between the majority and dissent there. The last thing I would say with this is if you go back to the course blog and the below these two cases, take a look at the Virginia Property Owners Association Act, and we can see at least what in Virginia is the way in which we govern this at the state level. And there's really not a lot of restrictions on what these homeowners associations can do one way or another. There are some restrictions as to what they could do with regards to flags or working at home, solar panels, so we can think about some of those industries. But we don't have something here, at least we didn't the last time I checked, about pets. Right, and the ability, like you have in California, where you are allowed at least one kind of pet in your property. We don't have that, at least at the state level, in Virginia.